Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Well, I hope you can hear me. I tried to play the Mudtoe intro, and it doesn't seem to want to play. Wonder why that is. Wait a minute. Ah, here we go. Welcome to Mudtoe at Midnight. I'm your host, Mudtoe Sasquatch. I'm a medicine man, and my chosen modality is the written and spoken word. My medicine bundle is open. I've lit the incense and offered it to the four directions. I invite you to sit with me in sacred ceremony. If you are an agent of the government, you are, of course, welcome to listen. But bear in mind that the words and actions of the medicine man in ceremony are protected under federal and international law. You can join the conversation by tweeting me at Mudtoe Sasquatch, M-U-D-T-O-E. Okay, I had to stop it there because I don't have Twitter anymore, so don't try and tweet me anymore. Okay, now listen to the rest of the intro. Oh, it won't work. I messed myself up.
Welcome to Mudtoe at Midnight.
I'm your hang on. Okay, you know how the rest of it goes anyway. Welcome. Mudtoe here for Mudtoe at Midnight. I still have to re-record that intro. I no longer have the Twitter account, so you can't reach me there anymore. But happily, the other part of it that I've been talking about, the part where I say I'm a medicine man, the last few weeks I've been saying I'm not supposed to say that anymore. It turns out that it's okay for me to say it now, and I'll tell you about that. I'll just tell you about it now, right now, because if I don't, I might forget. I got an email from the church, which I interpreted it to say, I thought it was telling us we need to be careful about how we use the term medicine man. So I stopped calling myself a medicine man. I kept on playing that intro that I have at the beginning of the show, but then after the intro, I'd say, oh, by the way, I'm not supposed to call myself medicine man anymore. I kept saying every week I was going to re-record the intro, and I haven't done it. But then this week, we were in a Skype meeting with the powers that be. And actually, no, that's not how we were in the Skype meeting. That's not where it happened. It was Iggy who told me. I asked him about it, if anything had changed, and it turned out I had misinterpreted the email. What he was he wrote the email. He was trying to encourage people to say that they were a medicine person. And I read it completely the opposite. And I went back after finding that out, read the email again, and I still think he was saying exactly the opposite. But I've had the experience in the past where an email or some sort of communication has gone out to a lot of people, and they have all, everybody except me, has understood it exactly the way the person who wrote it wanted it to be understood. And I was the only one who got it messed up. So since I have a history, I will just go ahead and say that I'm the one who messed up, and that it's perfectly okay for me to still call myself a medicine man, so I'm going to do it. And you just heard it in my whole exercise there that I messed up. But anyway, here we are. It's showtime, and hope you all had a good week. I had a decent week, not as productive as I would have hoped, although as I hinted at earlier, we did have a meeting of the Minnehaha Chiefs via Skype, and it was a productive meeting. I think we all we're in the midst of a change in administration. Our elected principal medicine chief is stepping down, and his son is taking over the reins. And so we're in the midst of redefining their roles and how it is we're best going to be able to serve the organization going forward. I don't think that's a secret. I think I'm allowed to talk about stuff like that. I suppose if I'm not, I'll hear about it. But it was good to be included on that. Good to have a place in that. My official role in the church is that I'm the historian, and I've done very little with it. I just don't know. It's never been specified exactly what the historian is supposed to do. What happened was, I wrote a story, just some personal emotional impressions about a sacred drum circle that I attended, and our elected principal medicine chief, Chief Cloudpiler, read it and proclaimed that I was the historian. And it's just never gone any further than that. I don't know, did they want sort of accounts of official events? Did they want things to be more fanciful? I know I've been working on some writing projects. There's some things that I've talked with other people in the church, things I've seen in Itsippi and in visions and that sort of thing that I wanted to express in a narrative form and share with people. But my feeling was that really wasn't sort of a historian position. At the same time, I didn't really feel, I don't want to be the guy who takes notes at the meetings. I don't think that's a historian position either. So what sort of evolved is this idea that when major events like the transfer of power happen, which is the first time this has happened since we've been an organized church, those things need to be documented, and those documents need to be made available to anyone within the church who wants to take a look at them, and you know, possibly to people outside the church if it's determined that it's any of their business. So I think that's the direction the position is going to go in. And hopefully I will be in touch with the new administration and get moving on some of those things. If nothing else, it gives me something to do other than sleep all day. So there's that. I'll tell you one thing I am not going to talk about today is the election. It's not that I don't care. It's that everybody else is doing plenty of talking about it, and I don't think I really need to. So that's that. I can say I do plan to go and cast my vote tomorrow. We have early voting here in my state, and that way I can avoid the. I don't know that the crush will be any less tomorrow than it will be. I'm guessing because it might be because our famed university has a home football game that day. So I'm hoping that will cause the polls to be a bit more accessible. I can go in there and get my business done. There are a number of local elections. That's one thing I guess I would say. Even if you don't have a horse in the big race, there are always all sorts of state and local elections that you can cast your vote, and those are things that are probably closer to each of us anyway. So I do want to do that. But I'm not sure about my vote in the big one. The person I want to vote for, I can't because he's not running. And in my state, you're not allowed to vote for someone who's not running, which to me seems like a gross injustice, but hey, there you go. So if I vote in the big race at all, it'll probably be someone I didn't really want to vote for, but hey, it won't be either the big two, I'll tell you that. And there will be no vote from me from either of the big two. It'll be one of those people who can't win, so I'm throwing away my vote, as they say. But, again, that's an argument for another time. I don't want to get into that. I've already spent more time on it than I was going to, so let's move on. You might notice a little crowd noise in the background. I am not at home today because of the big hurricane, or maybe not. I think that's just the excuse du jour every time something goes wrong. Why is my sandwich cold? It's because of the hurricane. But ostensibly because of the hurricane, my internet service at my apartment is down. Since Monday night, it's been down, so I couldn't do my show on Skype there the way I usually do. So I packed everything up. I came here to Garcia's, which is my friend Iggy's restaurant, and I've set myself up here in a little corner, and I'm doing the show from here. And it's not quite as rocking here as it was a little bit ago, because it is getting, it's past midnight here Eastern time. It's getting a little late. But there's still a few people at the bar chatting and having a good time, so you may hear that going on from time to time in the background. Also, I may have to leave you in the care of a substitute host for a few minutes. I understand there's someone on their way here, and they have a load of firewood and some fire equipment to pass along to someone else who's already here, and I have been asked to go outside and help to move these materials from one pickup truck to another pickup truck. I told Susie, Iggy's wife, who used to have a show right here on the Wits Insights channel, but I guess that band kind of broke up. And anyway, she asked me if I would go out and help move this firewood from one truck to another, and I said I would be happy to, but someone would have to take my place here at the Blog Talk Radio broadcast desk. So you may hear the lovely voice of Susie at some point during the show, whilst I put on my winter coat and go outside and move firewood. Or maybe you won't. Maybe she decides she didn't want to be on the radio after all and found somebody else to do the job. In any event, I just wanted to warn you that that might happen. Let's see. I'm in Garcia's. It's here on Hudson and High Street in my large city in the Midwest. Dates back to the 1970s. Was originally owned by Iggy's father, Gino, and now is owned by him. It was the first Latino restaurant in our city, and it made quite a splash when it opened up. Spawned a number of imitators, and I believe most, if not all of them, fell by the wayside rather quickly. And Gino, the original owner, had sort of a peculiar tradition of going around to these places as they failed. You know, usually there's some sort of auction that follows the failure of a business. He would go there and he would pick up memorabilia from each of these other Latino restaurants that had gone under, and his hadn't. And I'm sitting next to my personal favorite of all of these. It's a large mirror about 6 feet by 3 feet, and it's got the name of this former restaurant written on it. All these things have the names of the restaurant on them, so you know. Yeah, this was from. I mean, things like the glasses. Some of the glasses on the bar have names of other restaurants on them. There's some signs from other restaurants. This is my favorite, though, this mirror. It's just this massive wall mirror with the name. I'll just say the name of the restaurant. It's Casa Gallardo. And that makes an impression on me because I remember when I was a kid seeing the commercials on television, and the guy would sing, Casa Gallardo, nothing better north of the border. Well, evidently there was something better north of the border. But that's neither here nor there now. They're gone and all the sins have been paid and their mirror is still here. I just get a kick out of it every time I come in. I like to pay a visit to the mirror. Look in the mirror. Like Tommy. Tommy, can you hear me? A little sip of my drink there. I'm drinking Sierra Mist with a little bit of grenadine in it. A combination commonly known as a Shirley Temple. But it's that I find the lighter stuff. The cola, if I drink cola while I'm doing the show, my walls go to walk with. So I got to stay with the clear stuff. Although it's sugary, that's not good either. But the lemon lime is kind of good for the voice. So here we are. What else have I been up to? We're getting a decent amount of writing done. Not as much as I would like to get done. I skipped over this part. I was on Iggy's show on Monday. The show he does with Rosa, and they do intuitive readings, and I don't, but I kind of get sucked into trying to do it because they're doing it. Because people call in, people call in and they ask a question, and Iggy and Rosa tell them stuff. And what I tried to do was to read something from the, not literally read, but to take something from the work, the writing that I've been doing. Like there's something one of my characters is experiencing or that I want them to experience. I think I went about 1 for 2. Once I was just like way off of whatever it was this person was talking about. And the other time what I was talking about seemed to strike a chord with them. I don't know. That's not the way I like to work anonymously. I really do prefer to just write down what I'm talking about and send it out there, or just speak it into this microphone and hope somebody out there, hope it gets to somebody out there who needs to hear it. That's the assumption I work under, is that somebody out there needs to hear the words I'm saying. Somebody out there needs to read the words I'm writing. And then my duty as a medicine man is to get that stuff in there. This radio show I'm doing kind of okay. With the writing, not so much. Although I do have the blog, I don't know how many people are actually looking at that. I feel very strongly that I need to write longer pieces and I need to get them into areas where more people can see them. So hopefully those of you who are listening to the show, if I ever manage to get on the stick and get some of this stuff done, Well, help me out with that. I'll certainly let you know here on the show when stuff like that finally does become available. I'm working on two things mainly for the past week. One of them is a short story, without getting into too many details. It's about a man who has lived his whole life in obedience to authority, an authority which has used him very badly. And he's come to a rather grisly place because of it. I mean, the experience has prevailed upon his body. His body has actually been ruined. I'm trying to tap dance around us, not telling exactly what the story is. But then he is given an opportunity by an sort of an alternate authority, you know, one of, that he has been taught to be opposed to, gives him an opportunity to make a choice to live the way he wants to live. And he's very resistant to it just because of he's been taught a certain thing his whole life. So there's this conflict between his loyalty to a certain form of authority and the fact that this authority has really used him very badly. There's always going to be reflections of my own life in what I write. This is one instance in one case in which that reflection is very fanciful. You know, I've never had experiences like experiences this character has, but I've had those same emotions of being, you know, badly used by an authority that I can't reach. I can't do anything to them. And would I be to resist an enticement from an alternate authority, even though I knew I really shouldn't, even though I had no inkling of whether to trust them, even though it's extremely possible that people sort of on my side, who had been on my side, the side I had been working for, fighting for before, were going to be badly affected by my decision. I think I'd have to start telling the story. I don't think that's not a good idea at this point. So that is something that I'm working on. And the other thing is a story is suggested to me by Susie, Iggy's wife, based on a vision that she had. And it is just, the story has just grown far beyond what she had suggested to me. It was a vision from a past life, which she was an infant being fought over by two people on horses, you know, being sort of passed back and forth, trying to gain possession of this bag that she was in. And the story has just gone leaps and bounds beyond that. And I posted some bits and pieces of it on my Facebook page, which is Mutto Sasquatch, if you want to check that out, and asked, you know, Susie's opinion, you know, is this okay? Because I know it was originally her story. And she said, it was my story now to go with it. So it's getting larger and larger, and I'm thinking that it could become a novel. And I thought what's happened is it's merged with a different story that I was considering. I came to know that this character that Susie was talking about was the mother of a character that I was writing about. And then later on, a whole third story occurred to me. There'd be one sort of a young, when this character, White Horse, was very young, and then when she was an adult, and then when she was older. Sort of three phases of it, but then that was going to be three separate stories. Well, now they've all sort of merged. You know, it's not that the separations between the stories just became less and less and less. And finally, I'm thinking, the hell with it. I think it's just all one long story. And I'm treating it like that now, and I'm thinking that might just get me to that magic 40,000 words I need to call it a novel, which is really kind of scary. I think I've said this on the show before. 40,000 is just sort of that arbitrary standard number. You say, okay, it's a novel now. And it's about 10 times longer than anything I've ever written. So it's scary. It's getting into that to create something that's whole and not contradictory within itself. and not boring at that length. And that's not an incredibly long novel at all. I mean, that's like the minimum. That's the shortest. Like a Harry Potter book is like 150,000 words. I mean, those things are massive. You get lost in those things. Like a Stephen King novel, you spend your whole life wading your way through one of those and not find everything that was there. I really don't aspire to anything like that, you know. I don't aspire to that kind of weight. And in fact, I think it's like it's what I call the Sergei Butka theory. Sergei was a Soviet pole vaulter who defected to the West, and he was doing his, he was this astounding pole vaulter. I believe he was the first one who ever pole vaulted more than 20 feet. Of course, everybody does that now. But he was just amazingly far ahead, and nobody could touch him. He was just the pole vaulting god, and he started to do it. They paid him appearance fees, to come to our track meet and do your pole vaulting here. And the way it was arranged was they paid him a certain amount to show up, and then they paid him a little bit more, probably not a little bit more, probably a lot more. They paid him more if he broke the world record at their meet. So what he started to do was he started to break the world record, but each time he would break it by the smallest amount you could possibly break it, like by 1 centimeter or half a centimeter, about the smallest notch they could move that pole up. And of course, to maximize the number of times he could break the record and be paid for it. So Sergei embraced the concepts of capitalism very, very quickly. That refers to me in my writing is, if I can muster 40,000 words into a book, why would I make it longer than that? Because if I write, why would I write one book at 80,000 words if I could write two books at 40,000 words each and hopefully get paid twice? So that's the strategy. I'm going to make thin books that can reside in bathrooms across America. You can read in a week's worth of visits to the restroom, you're done. And then you can get on the internet and buy the next one. I just reviewed my publishing strategy with you. You can comment on that. You can reach me, as I said, I don't have a Twitter account anymore. But you can email me. My Gmail is mudtoesasquatch, all one word. It's mudtoesasquatch. At gmail.com, and I can see your comments there. Also, you can reach me on the website, which is mudtoesasquatch.com, and you'll see samples of my writing there. I post new blog entries Tuesdays and Fridays. Those are usually shorter. Those would be about 1,000 words or less, so you can easily take one of those in one sitting. The one I posted today was, those tend to be more personal too. Because they're shorter, it's hard for me to create a set of characters or even one character. It's usually just something I'm thinking about or something that happened to me. This particular one that I posted today was about something that happened to me. I was going out to actually come here for dinner, and I noticed that my car, which sits outside of my apartment across the street, got to park on the street because we don't have a parking lot. My car was a little bit into the little area that's reserved for the bus stop. Yeah, I just hadn't parked it properly when I pulled in, whenever it was I pulled in. And I was about 2-3 feet into that bus stop zone. And, part of me said, nobody's going to worry about that. And then the other part of me, I call my mom voice, because mom is the one who always worried about that sort of thing, and I can hear her. She's in my DNA, and she talks to me through that. The part of her that's in me says, "No, you got to go. Go move that. Just be safe. There's room for you to move it. Just go ahead and move the car." So I did, and that's what I wrote about. And I actually did get a comment. Somebody read it and said they liked it. So that's nice. I love it when people read it and say they like it. Love it when people read it and say they didn't like it. But if you say you didn't like it, I would appreciate it if you told me why. And if it's the story, if it's the elements of the story that you didn't like, probably not a lot I could do about that because the story is what it is. It comes out of my head that way, and I try not to argue with it. I find that the results are generally very poor when I try to turn the story into what I want it to be rather than what it is. But if there's something in my use of language, something in the pacing, anything you think that would make the form of the story better, It's also fun to hear from people who say you shouldn't write that story. I'm not going to be drawn into that argument, but I am very interested in hearing people's reasoning. Sometimes it helps, you know. And it's always possible that that I exceed my authority to tell a story if I should happen to start telling somebody else's story instead of my own. That can happen. That has happened once or twice. So if you think that perhaps I've let something out of the proverbial bag that I shouldn't have, or if I've crossed a line that I shouldn't have crossed, I'm not going to go back and forth about anything, but I'm very interested in your opinion and what it is that makes you think that, and it may cause me to amend my own thoughts, my own feelings on the subject. It's happened before. It changed my mind. Like they say in that song from Big River, if you've ever seen that show, the musical of Huckleberry Finn, my favorite show, and it's called, whatever it's called. There's a line in it about people changing their minds, letting go of prejudices that they've held their entire lives. Boy, that really veered off track, didn't it? Okay, see, now I've hit one of those problem areas. I've talked about everything that I wanted to talk about. I've still got about 3.5 minutes left. Oh, no, I did not talk about it. Here it is. I had a Yahoo News story pulled up here just in case of such an emergency. And here it is. Hyundai and Kia to pay 900,000 owners for overstating mileage on window stickers. Here's what happened. I'll just read a couple paragraphs of the story. This is written by, that's so small, Justin Hyde. Well, I see they've given somebody a byline. I like to pass it on. For the past few years, Hyundai has touted itself as selling more vehicles that achieve 40 mpg on the highway than any other automaker. Today, U.S. federal regulators announced that Hyundai and Kia Motors have inflated the fuel economy ratings on 900,000 vehicles sold since 2010. The automakers will compensate owners for the extra burned fuel and kill their incorrect ads as well. Of course, that extra burned fuel will never get that back as far as, we are running out of this stuff. Skip down here a little bit. We're just extremely sorry about these errors, John Krafcik, Hyundai CEO of American Operations, told the Associated Press. We're driven to make this thing right. And it goes on to explain that those two companies are owned by the same people in South Korea, but they operate as competitors here in the States, and they're very aggressive competitors, and they started this thing with the MPG to try and differentiate themselves from each other. Hyundai and Kia say the errors were due to a flaw resulting from changes to its fuel economy test starting in 2010 model year that overstated efficiency on 13 models, including, and it lists the models and the numbers. When the Environmental Protection Agency set the testing procedures that automakers must use to measure fuel economy, it relies on the companies to self-report accurate claims. In other words, they set the standards, but they let the companies do the test themselves, and the federal government just takes the numbers that they produce and puts them on the stickers. So what's the lesson here? I guess the lesson here is don't believe anything anybody tells you. It's about the money. That's the lesson. You know, it's... And modern capitalism lost sight of what the goal is supposed to be. The goal is supposed to be, you know, making, as a capitalist, if I make a product, you know, the best combination of, product quality, cost, you know, my customer wants it, I can get it to them. You know, I work hard to make all of that the best that it can be, you know, and I can still afford to make it and make a profit selling it. But you focused on that, and if you were the best, then you would get the most business and therefore profit the most. That the product came first, and then the money came after it. Today, the money comes first. We worry about the money before we worry about the quality of the product, and hope we get away with it. And when we get away with it, we're rich. If we don't get away with it, then we're just slightly less rich than we used to be. And on that cheerful note, I will say good evening. Thank you for listening to my show. Please check in next week, and I'll have lots more wonderful, interesting stuff to share with you. Again, thanks for listening, and good night.